Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Kia ora everybody, I'm Jordan, host of the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast. It's my hope that you find support and comfort in these stories, and I'm really looking forward to bringing you today's episode. Just a reminder before we get started that these are personal experiences and you should always seek medical advice before making any important decisions. I'm not an advocate for any particular model of birth or birth care, and this is simply a platform to share these empowering Kiwi birth tales with you all.
This week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales is sponsored by Your Birth Project. If you follow me on Instagram, you've probably heard of Your Birth Project before. It is an online hypnobirthing or calm birthing course that was created by me. So you can access it anywhere in the world, and it encompasses hypnobirthing and calm birthing practices that you will find super helpful in whatever kind of labor and birth experience that you end up having. The idea or intention with this course, from my perspective, is that as many families as possible have access to birthing techniques that will empower and inform them in their births. And I believe that this should be accessible. So you don't have to be in a certain location or have, you know, heaps of money to be able to access this course. There's a payment plan option and it's $89 New Zealand dollars. So it's accessible, and I'm just hoping that as many families as possible can jump onto the course. It's got an awesome section for birth partners, and it's got a really beautiful birth video at the end as well. So I know you're going to love it. If you've got any questions, feel free to send me them on Instagram or on email. Otherwise, feel free to check out Your Birth Project on Instagram, which is at Your Birth Project, and there's a highlight on that page which talks about the awesome testimonials from other Your Birth Project mums who've done the course. In this week's episode, I speak with Shan, and Shan takes us through the birth of her daughter Esme. Shan had a really beautiful birth experience in the water. She wasn't initially planning on a water birth, but that's where she ended up, and it's just a really lovely story. Shan was also a bodybuilder before she fell pregnant, so she talks through that sort of transition from training really hard and being so cautious about what she eats to then falling pregnant and having that sort of transitional phase into less exercise, and that first 12 weeks feeling like you can't focus quite so much on what you eat. So yeah, she covers a recovery in her postpartum period and also some mastitis in her breastfeeding journey as well. But I just think it's a really lovely story and I know you're going to enjoy it. So I will stop talking now and we can jump into it.
Hey, Shan, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today.
No worries. Thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. Would you like to tell the listeners a little bit about you and who's in your family?
Yeah, sure. So I am Shan and my husband Mike, and we've been married for about 4 years. We live in Hawke's Bay and we have a little bubba who is now 2 weeks old.
Yeah, awesome. And what's her name? It's Esme, isn't it?
Her name is Esme, yeah. And we also have two little doggos as well.
Yeah, awesome. Very cool. I love her name. It's, very cute. And do you want to tell us a little bit about what the journey was like to pregnancy for you guys?
Yeah, so journey to pregnancy was pretty exciting for us. I was diagnosed with PCOS, which I kind of had a feeling I had anyway. I was diagnosed with that probably in 2019. I had the ultrasound. And a little bit of my background is I had been training for the last couple of years for WBFF, which is like a kind of like a bodybuilding cross Victoria's Secret style show. So my training was pretty intense, and along with the PCOS, I never really ovulated that frequently. So probably maybe like 4 to 6 times a year. And then I was supposed to go to LA and a year ago today. To compete in the pro show, but thanks to COVID, we got cancelled 3 weeks out.
Oh, no.
So I'd been dieting and training pretty hard for that. So I hadn't had a period since January 2020. And then show got cancelled, went into lockdown and decided to, you know, start eating and training less. So, but I went to my doctor and said, hey, look, I still haven't got my period. This is about July or June.
Yeah.
So still haven't got my period. Can we, like, do some blood tests and figure out what's going on? Did that and it all came back normal, but just still had no period, which I was, like, a little bit concerned about. And then a few weeks later, I noticed that I had a few random symptoms, and I was like, oh, yay, my period's coming, hallelujah. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is a ripper of a period. I'm getting really bad cramping. I've got really sore boobs, and, like, I'm super full of fluid. Like, it must be the period coming. And then no period, and I was like, this is a bit weird. Then noticed that my boobs had got really big, and I was like, oh, like, I'm pretty sure when you eat lots of food it doesn't just go to your boobs. And so I was like, okay, I'm just gonna rule it out and take a pregnancy test, and sure enough there were two lines.
Yeah, awesome. And how were you feeling? Were you shocked, or did you kind of expect it? What was the sort of initial emotion?
It was complete shock, because I honestly didn't think I could get pregnant. I was really in the mindset that whenever Mike and I decided, we sat down and had the conversation of let's try for a baby, that we were going to need help. I honestly believed that getting pregnant was not going to be an easy journey for us. So when I saw it happened out of the blue, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. And how were you feeling in that first trimester? So you obviously mentioned a few of these really early symptoms, but how did things progress from there?
So I really had high expectations for pregnancy and how glamorous it was going to be and everything like that. But I got a very quick reality check about 6 weeks in that pregnancy is not glamorous and it is not that much fun. I was really, really sick. I only vomited probably a handful of times, but the nausea, the hangover was just relentless. And it started, I probably started having the nausea around 7 weeks, and it definitely didn't ease off till about 18 weeks.
It was a
big shock.
I feel for you. I'm just coming out the other side of that, and it's just like, it's all you can think about, right? All day, every day. It's so horrible.
Totally.
And how did you go with finding a midwife? Did you choose a midwife for your care, or did you go with an obstetrician? What was that like?
I actually am a theatre nurse as well, so I work in at the DHB.
Oh, nice.
And so I see quite a lot of cesarean sections, so we meet quite a few midwives through that.
Yeah.
And I looked up online the kind of, like, up at the midwives available, and there was a couple that I wanted to talk to, and then that same day, that shift, we did a cesarean section, and my midwife came in for that. Section. And I was like, oh, well, this is obviously a sign.
Yeah.
So I had a chat to her there, and then, we hit it off from there.
Yeah, awesome. That's cool. And how did you find the rest of your pregnancy experience? So did you do the standard testing that's offered in New Zealand, and did you find out the sex of your baby?
Yeah, so the rest of the pregnancy was a bit of an adjustment for me, because I was going from training, 6 to 7 days a week down to zero, because I just really was so exhausted and so sick all the time. But other than that, we testing wise we did the Illumi screen.
Oh yeah.
So we tested for a few genetic abnormalities. Then that was about 11 weeks I did that test, and then we did a gender reveal, and we found out at 15 weeks with a few of our friends and family that we're having a girl.
Oh, nice. Very cool. What did you do for your gender reveal?
We just had heaps of people around, and we popped a big black balloon that was filled with pink.
Yeah, awesome. Very nice. And how were you feeling going into your third trimester? Did you have many changes in symptoms? Or I know some people find the second trimester the best, but some people love the third. So how were you feeling?
Yeah, I think probably halfway through second trimester still felt pretty similar to first.
Yeah.
And then more towards end of second, start of third was definitely like my nice period where the nausea had kicked back. and I wasn't like feeling pregnant as.
Nice, cool. And did you do any antenatal classes or birth education to help you sort of inform your decisions about how you wanted your birth to go?
Yeah, so I did the pelvic physio course, which was just over 2 nights where I met up with a pelvic physio, and she basically talked through basically the pelvic floor and different ways to strengthen it and actually different ways to relax it and open it for birth. So that was really helpful. And then we also did a weekend antenatal class, just Saturday, Sunday, which was really cool, especially for Mike, my husband. Just a few things that in there that he probably wasn't aware of.
Yeah.
And then I think about 25 weeks is when I really started to put in the work for preparing for a labor. My past experience with births and labor was pretty medical, I should say.
Yeah.
So basically the only time that I had seen a birth was when there was an intervention and when everything had basically gone wrong. So, you know, emergency cesarean sections and all the scary stuff basically that you go to theatre for was my experience of birth. So I really had to put in a lot of work to try and change my perception and my mindset around birth, because otherwise I think I would have just ended up, you know, down that same path as well. So I found your podcast, which my friend suggested to me, which was The Little Seed. And that was awesome, listening to other women's stories and hearing that, you know, birth doesn't have to just be, you know, done in a hospital and that there are other ways to do it. Then that led me to your birth project, which is something that my husband and I did together, which was incredibly helpful. And then from there, I just went on a bit of a journey. I was just watching natural home births, and I read Ina May's book, and I just basically absorbed, you know, saturated my brain, I should say, with natural, no intervention, beautiful, positive births.
Yeah, awesome, very cool. So I'm guessing that was your ideal plan for how your birth would go.
Yeah, because initially I remember talking to a few of our anaesthetists when I was pretty early pregnant and being like, all right, as soon as I walk in the hospital, I'm first in line for the epidural. That was my original plan. And then then towards the end I was like, nope, I don't want to see any doctors. I'll have this baby at home. So it was like a real 180 for me.
Yeah, cool. And so with the home birth planning, what did you have to do from that perspective? And was your midwife on board? And, yeah, how did you find all of that?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't quite have a home birth because I was just a little bit nervous for the first one. But my plan was to go to our primary birthing unit, which is actually attached to our hospital.
Cool. Awesome.
So the primary birthing unit in Hawke's Bay is quite strict. There's quite a few criteria that you have to meet to be able to go there. Like you can't do a V back there or anything like that.
Right.
It's like very, very tight criteria to be able to give birth there.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. And did you do anything sort of in preparation for birth, or that sort of postpartum period, like antenatal expressing or perineal massage, anything like that?
Yeah. So from the pelvic physio lady, she really encouraged doing the perineal massage. So that was something that I definitely started. And so I started the perineal massage at 34 weeks. I started raspberry leaf tea at 33 weeks and forward leaning inversion, which is something off Spinning Babies. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Love that website.
So I was doing that from 33 weeks as well. And then I also did acupuncture from 36 weeks. I was eating dates from 36 weeks. Antenatal expressing from 37 weeks. And then if I got over 40 weeks, I was going to look into doing stretch and sweeps.
Yeah, awesome. Cool. And do you want to talk us through your labour starting? So was it spontaneous and how far along were you?
Yeah, so the day before my due date, I was getting a few tightenings, which sort of felt like Braxton Hicks, but they were more in my back, which made me a little bit nervous at the time, thinking that I was having a posterior baby, because that was probably one of my biggest fears, was having a posterior baby. But they kind of just came and went and didn't really do much. Then on my due date, I had a show, which was super, super exciting. And I was like, oh my God, I'm actually not going to be pregnant forever. Because at that point, it kind of felt like I was going to be pregnant forever. Then the tightenings kind of started on my due date evening a little bit, but didn't really, you know, eventuate into anything. And then day after my due date, which was a Sunday, I just felt really, really off that day, really, really terrible. I didn't want to eat anything. I didn't want to move. We had the blinds pulled and we just watched movies all day. My best friend from Wellington came up and she was staying with us because she was going to be part of my birth team with my husband. And we just chilled inside all day, which was really nice. Then that evening, I think my contractions started around 5 p.m. I was starting to feel a few sort of tightenings in my belly. They kind of felt like the Braxton Hicks, but they did have a little bit of a more of a bite to them. They're probably like 5 to 6 minutes apart and, 40-ish seconds.
Yeah.
But, they were – I could definitely talk through them, and, like, I went for a walk and made dinner and had conversations and everything. But, they weren't too discomforting, but they were starting to get more noticeable, definitely. Then I think it was about 8 p.m. I went for a walk with Taylor because she was like, hey, look, things are starting to maybe progress. Let's try and kick things off. Let's keep the gravity, you know, working. Let's keep pushing baby further down into the pelvis.
Yeah.
So we went for a quick walk and then I had a bath and chilled out with Mike, and he just sat beside me and we, you know, we just talked for a little bit. And in the bath, I noticed that I had a couple of contractions that were really, really strong. And they were the first sort of ones that made me think, oh my God, like, this baby potentially is coming.
Yeah.
Tonight, maybe. And then, Mike and I just sat and talked, and I knew that from reading Ina May's book, she talks a lot about how the partner can really help the labor progress by doing lots of cuddling and talk and kissing and that kind of stuff. So, you know, I got Mike to just do that kind of stuff with me. Then after that, we kind of decided that maybe we'll go to bed because, you know, this is my first labor and it could be, you know, this could be a long haul. This could be another 24 hours before anything happens. So we're like, okay, let's go to bed. So Mike jumped into bed. Taylor was up watching TV and I lay in bed too. And I was just lying there, but there was no way I could lie still. I was tossing and turning and cramping really bad. So I was like, nah, I need to get up. So I went and sat in the lounge with Taylor and just used my birth ball and just bounced around for ages. And she had The Office playing, which is not something that I usually like to watch. And then, I was doing lots of figure eights with my hips, trying to keep pushing baby down. And then, contractions basically pretty textbook, just got longer and stronger and closer together. We used the TENS machine as well, which was really, really good.
Oh, yeah.
I highly, highly recommend that. But if anyone's ever – have you used it before?
No, I didn't use the TENS machine.
There's a boost function on it, which you have to be, like, pretty deep in labor to be able to tolerate, which I just wanted to test out when I probably wasn't quite deep enough. And oh, my God, it was pretty intense and, like, literally made me scream. But when I was deep in labor and using that boost function, I barely even noticed that it was going. That is how different the contractions were from start to end. So from 10 p.m. my contractions were pretty back to back and I was like hardly getting any breaks, and I was really needing to concentrate, and I was really needing to use Mike and Taylor. And we had the room set up really dim just in the lounge and had the diffuser going and had some relaxing music. And yeah, it was a pretty nice environment, which was good. Not that I can like really remember much about it, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, it's a bit of a trance kind of when you look back on it, isn't it? It's a bit, I feel the same.
Yeah, and when I try and think about like what was the pain actually like, I couldn't even tell you. Then about 11 p.m. was when it really kicked off. So contractions started at like 5 and now this is 11. So it was pretty close. It was pretty soon. It started to get really intense. But I was really hesitant to call my midwife because I thought there's no way that I should be this like this deep and active labor yet. But I sure was. So we phoned my midwife and got her to come around. So she came around and she did a vaginal examination just to see how dilated I was. And we were super stoked that I was 5 centimeters.
Yeah, awesome.
So contractions were about 2 minutes apart and lasting, you know, 45 to 70 seconds. So we decided to go to the primary birthing unit. But we were in level 2 at this point in Hawke's Bay. So that meant that I was only allowed one person to come with me. So that meant Taylor had to stay home, which was really, it was pretty devastating because we'd done all that hard work together to get her, you know, to get this baby out. And she really wanted to be there. And I obviously really wanted her there. So we had to leave her behind. But Mike and I jumped in the car and it's about a 20-minute drive to the hospital from where we are.
Yeah.
And it's a 100K zone and this is at midnight. So, you know, you think, okay, maybe like a little bit shorter than 20 minutes. But no, we got stuck behind a car going 65Ks, which is pretty typical. And I just remember like lying, I was in the front seat of the car. I had my head like stretched out like, oh, my God, could this get any worse right now? But it was all good. We got there and we got there safely and Mike was like, should I overtake them? I was like, no, I'd rather just get there in one piece. So we arrived at the hospital at about 12:30 and honestly coming into Waiahau, it literally felt like such a dream because I feel like I know all the complications that can go wrong with a birth and I was not half expecting, but I, you know, you kind of had these ideas that something might go wrong in your birth. And so when I arrived into Waiahau and everything just felt exactly like I had hoped and dreamed for it, it did definitely just feel like such a dream moment. Lisa had the pool running, which was great. So I ripped off the TENS machine and literally jumped in straight away. It was just the most relieving feeling ever jumping into the pool. I thought I might like to labor in the pool, but I didn't think I wanted to give birth in the pool. But as soon as I got in there, I knew there was no way that I was going to come out. She wheeled over the nitrous oxide as well, which was again something that I wasn't sure if I was going to like, but absolutely loved that. That was amazing. It didn't really stop the pain, but it definitely gave me something to concentrate on, and it just kind of made me feel really dreamy and really relaxed. And yeah, it really just helped. It just helped with the whole environment, which was really cool. Not long after I had been in the pool, I was having a contraction and doing my breathing. And about halfway through my out breath, I got this really wild feeling to push. When it was just like, it was about a second of pushing, and it came with like a very deep primal sort of groan. And I remember looking up at Lisa and Mike and being like, you know, what the hell was that? And she just reassured me that, you know, that was probably just what my body needed to do. That baby was, you know, starting to make her way down, and that I just needed to go with it. And I remember in your birth project, you said that even if you were passed out, your body would still know what to do. And I kind of just wanted to go with that. And I figured I don't want to use up all my energy because I'm pretty exhausted pushing this baby out. I quite like my uterus and body to do the work for me. So I didn't consciously push for most of my labor, which was really pretty cool feeling, knowing just my body like involuntarily pushing down. And it was a sort of a weird feeling. It was kind of like the same reflex, like a gag reflex, you know, when your whole abdomen tightens up and pushes. It was kind of, it reminded me a little bit of that. So it wasn't scary. It was kind of familiar in a weird way. As everything progressed, I kind of wanted to see what was happening down there with baby, because I was in the pool, so Lisa couldn't check that often, and I just wanted to see what was happening. So I popped a finger in just to see what was going on, and I could feel, because these are after a couple of push contractions, I could feel my water bag at the top, and I was like, oh my God. So, and then Lisa's like, well, can you feel her head? And I said, I don't know. So I pushed into the water bag and I could feel her head, which was super, super exciting and like a little bit weird to say. But yeah, it was super, super motivating at the time to just know that all this work that I'd been doing over the last few hours was actually like coming to something positive, that my baby was actually getting closer and closer. Then a few contractions later, the waters broke and I felt it with like a massive pop into the water, but luckily being in the pool it didn't make a mess. Then I just kept checking after each contraction to see how far away she was, and I was using my finger. I was like, yeah, no, she's like this knuckle closer, this knuckle closer. And then towards the end, yeah, it was pretty cool. Lisa then said, hey, look to Mike, do you want to see? And I was like, no, don't look. But he said that they could see like an avocado pip, and I was like, oh my God, that is terrifying. Because it felt like her whole head was out at that point. There was so much pressure down there. Then a few more contractions and they said they could see an avocado, and I was like, oh my God. And then next big contraction, I managed to get her head out. With Lisa said, just give a couple of, you know, conscious pushes now just to get her out properly. So I you know, bared down a little bit and got her head out, and then at this point I was pretty over labor and I was pretty exhausted, and I didn't want to wait for another contraction, because quite often I've seen baby's head comes out and then there's a bit of a lull in your contractions, and I was like, that kind of terrifies me. So I used that same contraction and pushed down and got the rest of her out. So she came out and I pulled her up onto my chest, and there was a bit of cord wrapped around her neck. So I pulled that off and, yeah, just sat back in the bath with her on my chest, which was pretty exciting.
Yeah, amazing. What a beautiful story. And so did you stay in the pool for a while, or what happened from there?
Yeah, so I stayed in the water for probably maybe like 10, 15 minutes, but we popped towels on her, and I don't know, I kind of just wanted to get out and get dry. I was a bit worried about her getting cold. So we got out of the water from there and kept the placenta attached to her for maybe, I think, a good like 30 minutes. We kept that attached until it stopped pulsing.
And did you need stitches or anything like that after your birth?
Yeah, so during the sort of crowning phase, I didn't really get much perineal pressure or stretching. It was more up the front. I felt it more like urethral. I was like, I said to Lisa, I was like it's hurting. I remember saying it's hurting up the front.
Yeah.
And so when we did when Lisa did a check after Esme was born, I said to her, I was like, I'm pretty sure my perineum's intact, but I said, definitely check up the top. And yeah, sure enough, I had a couple of tears going peri-urethral, so they kind of went up towards the clitoris as well, which was not great. But hey, look, it's a small price to pay.
Yeah. And so did you need stitches for those?
Yeah. So my midwife said that because they were going towards like quite important structures like your urethra, we decided to transfer across to the maternity ward, which is literally just a wheelchair across a hallway.
Yeah.
And got one of the registrar doctors there to do the sutures, which was significantly more painful than the birth. So they popped in heaps of local, and I was really nervous for the local going in because I know how much local stings when it first goes in. And that was fine. I was like, oh, this is cool. And then we had to do the deeper tear, and my God, I needed the gas and air. And those poor women in Atarangi who heard me scream, because I swear the local didn't work, and there was a couple of stitches that I was like, I felt that.
Yeah. And how were you feeling sort of after that? Like, was Esme with you the whole time? And I guess what were those next couple of hours like?
Yeah, so when we went to get the stitches done, I was feeling a bit shaky and a bit tired, and I didn't feel quite up to holding her. So Mike had her and was holding her skin to skin, which was really cool.
Nice.
And then when we got transferred back after the stitches were done to the primary birthing unit, then, yeah, I had her on my skin for the rest of the night, because it was probably about 5 or 6 a.m. by then. So neither of us had slept, and we just had her on my chest and just lay in bed together, which was really cool.
Yeah, awesome. Nice. And how long did you end up spending there before you went home?
She was born at 2 a.m. and we stayed obviously that day, and then we stayed one more night, and then went home the day after that. But because we were in level two, we were only allowed one visitor the next day. So we can't. We're kind of keen to get home, so that, you know, because only my mum came to see Esme, and we wanted a few other people to come get to meet her as well.
Yeah, awesome, cool. And how did you find going home? Obviously, such a huge change, and just everything has changed. So, how did you find bringing your new baby home and adjusting in those first couple of days? And did you notice the baby blues or anything like that as your milk came in? What was that experience like?
We were so lucky when we came home, because Taylor was obviously staying with us, and she had like cleaned our house and got food ready and everything. So we were so lucky when we came home. It was like coming home to a hotel.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so we're so lucky. So that was super awesome coming home. And honestly, I just felt so good to be home, and I felt so good not being pregnant. I felt during my pregnancy I had this kind of like fog over me the whole time, and the second she left my body, I swear it, that fog lifted, and I just felt a million bucks.
it was really
nice to be home and not be pregnant. And yeah, when my milk came in, probably I think it must have been the Thursday or Wednesday maybe, so yeah, a couple of days after birth. And I think because my birth experience was really positive, and I came home to a really, like, I had quite a big village around me, so my parents were here and Mike's parents were here, and I had Taylor and Mike here, I didn't really notice any baby blues. It was more like what my midwife said. She said some people get the baby pinks, where, you know, you cry because you're so happy.
Yeah.
And I think I had more of that rather than anything feeling sad. And I think that's, you know, a bit because of the, you know, the amazing village I had around me.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. And how did you find breastfeeding initially, and how has that sort of changed over the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, so breastfeeding, definitely the biggest unexpected challenge.
Yeah.
I think I tolerated a few bad latches in hospital, or maybe I just was getting used to it, but it was really, really painful, a lot more painful than I was expecting.
Yeah.
It was kind of like those few latches were literally felt like needles getting jammed into your nipple. It was really sore. And that lasted for probably about a week, I think. And then about a week later, the scabs started to come off my nipples from the blisters, because I think she had been tolerating bad latches, like the lipstick latch, where, you know, the nipple actually is getting squashed rather than at the back of the throat.
Yeah, right.
And so it had caused a few blisters, and then I had to feed over that. And yeah, it just caused a lot of trauma to the nipple. But yeah, after that week, it was pretty good. And but then I think because I had got that damage, one of the ducts had got blocked. So I think, I've just in the last sort of 4 days just been recovering from mastitis.
Oh no, you poor thing. I had mastitis. It gives me the shivers just thinking about it.
I know. It was so awful. I remember just sitting on the couch one afternoon, and I was like, oh, I don't feel so good. Like, I'm starting to feel a bit like achy and headachy. And I was like, oh, something's brewing. I was Googling, I was like, early symptoms of mastitis. I was like, oh no, here we go. So I tried to do everything natural. I did the massage. I got the mastitis drops. I got vitamin C. I was trying, you know, basically everything natural, because antibiotics was not something that I was super keen to do, especially because I didn't like the idea of putting antibiotics into her little tummy, you know, at less than 2 weeks old. But yeah, I tried that for a couple of days, and I was getting night fevers and sweats, and I felt like shit, basically.
Yeah.
So I was like, bugger it, I just need to go on antibiotics and I need to get this sorted so I can actually be a mother again.
Yeah. I think you can definitely try all of the things, right? But if they're not working, you just have to do what's best for you. I remember waking up when I had mastitis in the nighttime and asking my partner, like, are you cold? Like, I am so cold. And he was like, no, what are you talking about? Like, it's the middle of summer, it's really warm in here. And I was freezing, and honestly thinking back to that, just it gives me the shivers. So I ended up using antibiotics too, and I wouldn't have survived without it.
I definitely needed them.
And how did you find your physical recovery? So how have you gone recovering from the stitches and just giving birth in general?
So the first week was quite tender. Those front stitches were real, like, pinchy, especially sitting down. So I definitely found it more comfortable to stand. So breastfeeding as well, I was way more comfortable standing than sitting down, just because I felt like I was going to rip them open when I sat down. But after the first week, they sort of settled, and, you know, 2 weeks now, I don't even notice them. I feel like I'm back to normal now, which is cool.
Yeah, nice. That's good. Awesome. And is there anything else that you'd like to share that we haven't covered?
Not sure. I don't think so. I think the biggest thing that I took away from this journey was that birth can actually be like a really, really beautiful experience. And as much as we think we need interventions, we actually don't. And, you know, I mean, like, obviously there are situations when we absolutely do, but I think a lot of women are a lot stronger than they probably realize. And I think doing the bit of the prep work can really give you like an amazing experience.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Sian, for coming on the podcast and sharing your stories with us. I think, like I said at the start, you've got a really beautiful story to share, and it's been really nice to hear. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. It's really a privilege to be able to talk on here. I've loved listening to these podcasts for the last 9 months, and it's so exciting being able to talk on one.
Yeah, awesome. Cool. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales. I really hope you enjoyed it. And just another reminder that this episode was sponsored by Your Birth Project, and I would really love for you to go and show your support at Your Birth Project on Instagram or www.yourbirthproject.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.